Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now back to Bonte, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back to BSNG. Can never go wrong with a little Hall & Oates. Joe Shasky, the Butcher Boy, and for Daryl the Guru Johnson. As we get set to talk to Dave Stewart in just a second, four-time 20-game winner, MVP of the 1989 World Series. Of course, that was against the San Francisco Giants, a three-time World Series champion. I want to talk to Dave Stewart about Juneteenth Day and what's going on in baseball here on 95.7 The Game. Juneteenth Day, a lot of people. You know, Shasky, we were talking before the show. Steiny, we were talking before the show. You guys had no idea what really Juneteenth was all about because it wasn't taught in our school system, which is just downright embarrassing. It's one of the oldest nationally celebrated holidays in celebration of the abolishment of slavery in the United States. Back in 1865, Major General Gordon Granger ended in Galveston, Texas, with the news that the war was over and all the enslaved were now free. Now, think about this. It took 2 years after Abraham Lincoln basically signed the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863. It still wasn't enough Union troops to enforce it. People still had a problem with it, and slaves weren't freed until 2 years later when General Lee surrendered in 1865. So it is a big day, and it is good that America is finally acknowledging Juneteenth Day here in America, fellas.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. I wasn't aware of it up until, you know, fairly recently, and just happy to be educated on it, to tell you the truth. So thanks, Bonte, and I'm very sincere.
No doubt.
Yeah, I you know, it's something that you brought up. I didn't learn about it in school, to be totally honest with you. I didn't really know. I saw it floating around on Twitter maybe a couple months back. And, you know, you click and you start Googling, you're going down the rabbit hole and you're like, how was this never taught to us? I don't know. It's just one of those things. I'm ashamed to say I never heard of it really until this year.
Let's bring in our next guest here, 1989 World Series MVP, three-time World Series champion, four-time 20-game winner, Dave Smoke Stewart here on 95.7 The Game. Stu, it's so good to catch up with you on a day like today. You had a tweet the other day saying that you've been in baseball for 40-plus years, having suffered through the silence of many around you, front office or the field. Few faces reflect mine. This video of the young men, and it was a video that Major League Baseball put out, all the African-American players put out a video saying Black Lives Mattered. You said basically the video of these young men have inspired your belief in a long-awaited change throughout baseball. Stu, welcome to the show. And kind of explain that tweet there when you saw this video of every black player in baseball basically saying, I am my brother's keeper and Black Lives do matter.
Well, I mean, what we've got is it's a wide range of our players. We've got some of our younger players as well as some of our older players in the game today that are all standing for what needs to happen in Major League Baseball, which is change. On the field, I think Dusty Baker may be the only field manager. In our front offices, there are no people of color that are making decisions. Kenny Williams, Mike Hill over in Miami, and Kenny Williams with Chicago. So there are no people that are making decisions in the upper positions when it comes to baseball. The number of children that are playing the game and coming into the game of baseball, the numbers are down. But you know, people have different reasons for why the numbers are down. I've always stuck to the reason that the numbers are down because it's tough for me. If I was a kid, it would be tough for me to play a game when I don't see very many when I don't see very many people that look like me playing the game. It would be difficult for me to want to get involved in that. That's why you see a lot of black kids gravitating to basketball and to football, because when you see that there is opportunity, you reach for that opportunity.
Dave, it would seem to me that one of the things that benefits all people is exposure to all people. How do we get people to be more exposed to people of different colors?
Well, I mean, I don't know that it's necessary exposure. It's not like, and I'll stay on the topic of baseball. It's not like the owners in baseball have sheltered themselves so that they only see people that look like themselves. I mean, if you leave your house, and you're going to see different nationalities and different colors and different races and all types of ethnic groups. To expose yourself to someone, you have to open yourself up to someone, and you have to understand that your intellect may be the same as theirs. Theirs may be the same as yours. Theirs may be better. But what I've always learned is that you learn from all different people. You learn from what people call the lowest to the highest. There's always something to be learned, but you have to open yourself up to understand those things. And what, like I said, was taken in baseball forever, what's taken place in baseball forever is that the owners have not opened themselves up, that blacks are not capable of doing as qualified a job as whites. It just not dawned on them that we're capable, and the capabilities and the qualities and the qualifications are across the board. If you've got a guy that's doing a job, you want the best qualified guy. And I just don't think that the sport has opened itself up to that yet.
Yeah, Dave, I'm curious your opinion on like the youth level, because I was growing up in the city and you were one of my idols. I'm being honest with you. You were awesome. You used to kick the crap out of the Giants, and I was looking at a picture of our old St. Mary's Park team, and it's a bunch of inner city kids. There's one of like three white boys on the team. The rest are all young black guys. And now you look around Little League Baseball and there's no inner city baseball. There's none. It's all travel teams, and it's really expensive. You grew up in Oakland. You came up playing the game in the city. How do we get more inner city kids playing baseball?
Well, I think one, you have to inner city kids. You have to make it affordable for them to play. I coached travel baseball for a number of years, and I didn't charge my kids to play. I didn't charge my kids to play in tournaments. I think that you should do travel baseball similar to what you do in high school sports or in college. The kids that have a little bit more difficulty in being able to participate, and you should pave a way for them to be able to play without, you know, having to pay financially. I think also one of the reasons why I love baseball is that I had support in my house. My brother played baseball. My father loved the sport. And my father, he exposed me to the game when I was very young. The first player I met was Willie Mays. We waited for hours and hours to get an autograph from Willie Mays. The first game I ever went to was Bat Day. And on Bat Day, my father waited hours and hours and hours until a large crowd of people was only one person. It was me and Willie Mays and my dad, so that's three. And I ended up getting that autograph, and I never forgot that day. And that day was stamped in my mind and in my heart for the game of baseball forever. Willie Mays was the example of what I wanted to be as a player and what I should be as a person. And so, I mean, there's a lot of ways to get kids back into it, but you just have to make the effort and take the time to get it done.
Dave Stewart here on 95.7 The Game, the 1989 World Series MVP. three-time World Series champion, four-time 20-game winner. Stu, when you look at today, and today, for the first time nationally, everybody's acknowledging that it's Juneteenth Day. And as a black kid, I knew what Juneteenth was. The Juneteenth Festival was something that black kids look forward to every single year, especially here in San Francisco, where we had it all down Fillmore Street. But over the years, they started to condense Juneteenth Day, where it was like eight blocks for a long time to maybe a four-block festival. What does it mean to you that it's finally getting acknowledged here in America? And two, do you think we're starting to make strides towards equality in America due to what happened to George Floyd on Memorial Day, due to all the peaceful protests? Where do you stand with that, Stu?
Well, having Juneteenth recognized, it was, in my opinion, it's similar to Martin Luther King. At first, nobody wanted to recognize Martin Luther King, that it should be a holiday. And then it started to catch momentum. And the more momentum it caught, the more states started to recognize it, that it should be celebrated as a holiday. And I think that Juneteenth should be the same. I think that people have to recognize what it means and what it stands for. And if you recognize that, I don't see any way that you can say this should not be celebrated. I just don't see a way that you can do that. It's unfortunate what happened to George Floyd and for that situation to take place. And the protesting, the peaceful protesting, I think, has been a sign of the times. But what's even a bigger sign of the times is the global protesting. It's not just happening in the United States. It's happening around the world. People are waking up and they're saying that it is time to do something different. We can't continue to live in a country, in a world where we're fighting against each other. We need to find unity. We need to find ways that we understand each other. And if you can do that, it just makes for a better situation everywhere. And I'll tell you what's even more impressive, is that we've got our youth, we've got our kids, our teens, 15 younger, two kids 25 to 30, and they're kids to me, I'm 63. So when you start getting that wide range of knowledge of what we're going through in this day and in this time and what this world is coming to and where it needs to be, when we old-timers are out of the way, there is a possibility that this world will be and what it's supposed to be.
Dave, it sounds like at this moment you're as optimistic. Is it fair to say you're as optimistic as you've ever been about maybe social justice and racial issues in the United States, even if it maybe still we should have been past this point?
Well, what gives me optimism is, like I said, that it's global and our youth are heavily involved and knowledgeable about what needs to take place and how to get it done. And so when the old layers wash away, the new layers come in, and that's what the world is going to be. And so, yes, I am optimistic that we're going to see a new day at some point. Now, it may not be in my time, but we're going to see – I am optimistic that we're going to see a new day.
Hey, Dave, I've always wanted to ask you this question about your career, because you started off with the Dodgers and then you go and you face them in the 88 World Series, and it's like legendary at this point, you and Steve Sachs. What was the background story with you telling him that you're going to drill him there? Because I think one of the forgotten starts in your career, and you had so many unbelievable playoff moments, is you were winning that game before Kirk Gibson hit that home run off of Eck. You were in line to get the game one victory. But what happened with you and Steve Sachs before that game?
See, Sachs, he denies it. I saw this on television. He denies it. If I saw him today, I'll tell him the same thing again. We were taking batting practice. Our team was coming on the field. Their team was going off. And obviously we were teammates, and I always considered us to be close. And when we were coming off the field, and he may have said it in a playful way, but he said, "Stu, I'm going to take you deep." And when he said that, I told him, "Okay, I'm going to hit you in the neck." And I think he thought it was playful, but when it comes to that kind of stuff, I don't play. And so first opportunity I got, I got him.
Stu, let me ask you this. You know, we know baseball is, we don't know if it's coming back or not. We're getting conflicting reports, 60-game season, 70-game, who knows at this point due to this pandemic. But back to Sunday, this last Sunday we saw Long Gone Summer. I want to know if you watched it and whether or not you have thoughts on McGuire as a teammate in the steroid era as a whole.
I did not get a chance to watch it, and I actually knew I wasn't going to be home, and so I did record it, but I haven't watched it yet. I don't know where this question is going, but I do think at the time, regardless of, you know, what the two have been accused of, they saved the game of baseball.
Yeah.
They got fans to open up their hearts. They got people to turn their televisions on. They put butts in the seats for a game that was suffering from that 94 strike. And so, you know, that's what I know. That's my emotion about it. That's how I feel about it. McGuire and I have maintained a friendship and a relationship through the years. And so I always have a special place for him. Sammy, I didn't get to know very well, but at a time when the game needed something, that run saved the game.
Dave, I want to ask you about your postseason success because it's legendary. I mean, you played before they actually introduced the second round and the wild card and all those things. I mean, 10 wins. I mean, you could just chalk yourself up basically to start in two times in a series, and you were going to win almost every single time. Why do you think no one ever brings you up as the dude who is the guy I hand the ball to in a must-win situation? Because for my money, you're at the short list. It's you, Madison Bumgarner, and I think I'm good. I think I'll just take you two.
You know, I don't. It's a tough question for me to answer. You know, I was asked back in the day. I won't say that it's racially motivated. I won't say that because people used to ask me about the 420s and not winning a Cy. The 420s and only making one all-star team.
And, wow.
You know, so when people ask me about that I don't know. I do know this. I pitched at a time when in the playoffs you pitched every fourth day, and they make a big deal about it now. I was expected that if we did it, I would start game 1, 4, and 7 in that period of time. And I wouldn't hesitate to say if we had the second level of playoffs, or if there are three levels, we only had one. There are three levels now. If we had those levels, my numbers would be as good as or better than whoever your top guy is now, and I would probably say better. I can't answer that question why my name's not mentioned with some of the guys that have done the things that they've done in the playoffs and in the postseason, in the league championships. I don't know why my name's not mentioned.
Well, it should be, Stu. 4-time 20-game winner.
Preach.
I know what you did to the Giants. We know what you did in the playoffs, Stu. I mean, you're a phenomenal 3-time World Series champion and an 89 World Series MVP. Here in the Bay Area, we know what type of postseason pitcher you was, and I think nationally they need to know it sooner rather than later. Stuart, this was Dave Stewart here on 95.7 The Game. This was so fun, and thank you so much for the time today. Hopefully you're staying safe during this pandemic. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Fellas, can I mention one more thing before I get off?
And absolutely.
I'd feel bad if I didn't.
Okay.
Because there's a forgotten man in the game of baseball, and he was the lone person to kneel. I think it's almost 4 years ago now, and that's Bruce Maxwell. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of guys that are speaking up now that
right.
were playing in the game at the time when Bruce took the knee. And Tony Kemp over in Oakland said that he felt bad that he didn't partake in what Bruce had asked him to be a part of. And, you know, we've got a bunch of guys now that are out there and they're speaking. I'm glad that they are. But let's not forget that Bruce Maxwell was the lone guy to take a knee to stand up for the things that we're fighting for today.
Stu, you know what? A lot of NFL players are planning on kneeling for the 2020 season if we do have a season. What do you think happens in a game of baseball if players start to decide to kneel?
Well, I think you're going to see it now because unlike when Bruce did it, you know, Bruce was the lone guy, but now there's a number. There are numbers now. And, you know, people are brave, man. When you're one guy, it takes a lot of strength to make a statement. When you're a lot, it doesn't take that much to make a statement. And so there are a lot of guys now that are making a statement, and I think that it's great that our young guys are doing it. I think that you are going to see some guys take a knee. I think you're going to see fist raise. And I don't think it's just going to be by the black players. It's going to be by the whites, and it's going to be by the Dominicans and the Asian, because the game of baseball is an international sport now. And so I think you're going to see it by all people, but I didn't want it to be forgotten that there was one guy, and I do believe that his career was sacrificed because he did it, Bruce Maxwell, that was the lone guy to take a knee at a time when he could have used the type of support that there is today.
Wow. I'm so glad you brought that up, Stu. So glad you brought that up. Shout out to Bruce Maxwell out there, who, you're right, he hasn't really gotten a shot at playing Major League Baseball since he did take that knee 4 years ago. Dave, this was a lot of fun, man. We got to do this again soon. Take care, stay safe, and hopefully we get some baseball soon in our lives here during this pandemic.
It's coming, brother, and I can tell you what, I'm ready for it.
I bet.
Thanks,
you are.
Dave.
We can't wait to see you on TV. Right. Thank you so much.
Dave.
All right, fellas.
Dave Stewart here on 95.7 The Game.
Hey,
man, that was good
he
stuff.
Owned Roger Clemens. That's no one ever remembers that. He
no, we
owned
do.
Roger Clemens.
Roger Clemens came out in game two. What is it? He came out with the eye black and got ejected. What was it? The 89
Clemens
ALCS?
Is a fool. Clemens is a fool. But like, seriously, we look at Clemens' time with the Yankees. Before that, he was pretty disappointing. If you look at the totality of his playoff performances, he left a lot to be desired because he was supposed to be the biggest, baddest pitcher in the game. It was him and Dwight Gooden in the mid to late 80s. Obviously, Stewart's right there with him, but Stu owned him. I mean, just absolutely owned him. He was so intimidating on the hill. I mean, God.
Yeah, I mean.
Love Dave Stewart.
Yeah. He's fun to watch. You know what, though? Like, when I, you know what I think sometimes when we talk about pitchers, like if you don't have that one thing, you know, and like I know that, you know, Dave Stewart, what was the, like he didn't just have one thing. He had a good fastball. But he also like had elite competitiveness. Yep. He also had elite intelligence in terms of approaching the game. And he also trained really hard and took care of himself. What I mean is, like, he was never really defined by, like, Clemens had, you know, Clemens was with a fastball, clearly. And right. Gooden, mm-hmm. Gooden threw heat early in his career, mm-hmm. like few before him. But Dave Stewart was more like a Greg Maddux, to tell you the truth.
And conditioning. He was in great shape.
Exactly.
The lower body, he was just, I mean, the guy was jacked out of his mind with those tight white pants on. He would be sweating on the mound, super focused, never looked rattled. Like, he had that Matt Cain kind of stoic thing going.
Yeah. Well, no, I think that's one thing that you just hit on, the intimidation factor. How many guys wanted to step up into the box when Dave Stewart is just staring at you with that brim low? The intimidation factor of Dave Stewart, I think, was huge, especially in those playoff games. Nobody wanted to step into the box against Dave Stewart. And he was just rolling in the playoffs, especially against the Giants in 89.
The way he bent his brim, you know, the hook, the real hooked brim that he had going, whenever we'd get a new hat, we'd mess around. And, you know, some guys liked it flat. Someone liked some of that we call it the Dave Stewart hook, you know, because he'd had that hook.
Right.
And then he'd put the cap real low and he'd look into the catcher. And it was just, man, I mean, he was laser focused.
You know, he brought up a lot of things, too, with the social justice. And he thinks, you know, he's 63 years old and he said, look, seeing the youth here speak up in America, really peacefully protest, I think is a big thing that change may come. That change may come. And I'm so glad he brought up Bruce Maxwell because he gets forgotten about. Colin Kaepernick, granted, he gets all the accolades for it, and Kaepernick's fighting a good fight, but we all forget about Bruce Maxwell. And I'm glad Dave Stewart brought that up and the meaning of what Juneteenth Day means here in America and around the world, man. I'm glad it's finally being celebrated. So we'll continue to talk about Juneteenth. We got Jeopardy coming up at 1 p.m. Shasky in for Darryl DeGuru Johnson for Jock Breedy. So, Steiny, we got to figure out if Shasky's win. If he does win, will it count for Guru, or would that L that Shasky gets count for Guru? We'll talk about that on the other side. Plus, we've got to bring up Jamal Adams. I haven't brought up Jamal Adams yet. We've got to bring up Jamal Adams coming up here on 95.7 The Game. And it'll be brought to you by DuckDuckGo. 888-957-9570, your phone calls. Should the Niners seek to trade for Jamal Adams, a safety out of LSU now with the New York Jets? We'll do all that here coming up on BSNG, and it's all sponsored by DuckDuckGo.
Now back to Bonte, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Thanks to Dave Stewart, who just joined us. Go to the radio.com app and download that to replay that interview with Dave Stewart. It'll be available on 95.7thegame.com shortly. Can't believe you have four straight seasons of 20-plus wins and not one Cy Young Award. Are you kidding me? One year you had 14 complete games. The other you had 11. I mean, come on, people. What was going on with the Cy Young voting back in the mid-'80s there? Also, Jock Breedy coming up. Jock Breedy coming up with Whitey Gleason at 1 o'clock. We have the category, Steiny. Shasky, this would be your first time, but I'm sure you've heard it. You know how it works with Jock Breedy. This would be a fun one coming up at 1 o'clock. And then plus Shasky's shuffle at 1:30 here on 95.7 The Game on BSNG. Joe Shasky, the Butcher Boy, in for Darryl DeGuru Johnson. Steiny in the building. Bonte's in the building here. And before we get into Jamal Adams, because news broke yesterday that Jamal Adams wanted out of New York City, we got to give a client shout out here. Let's take a minute to thank our advertisers who have stuck with us through this pandemic, this incredibly difficult time. I want to shout out Comcast, Fremont Bank, and Golden State Lumber.
I'm going to take Shreve & Company, and one of my favorites, Chilton Auto Body, and O'Donnell Financial Group.
Yeah, guys, I'm going to go with my particular insurance company for the vehicles here at the house, Geico, and the place where I go all the time, Safeway. Shout out Mission Street, Monterey, Westlake, all my favorite spots. And not only that, but video only as well, guys.
It couldn't hurt.
Absolutely.
Hey.
Couldn't hurt at all.
Hey, Bonte and Shasky, real quick, because obviously when you start thinking about Dave Stewart, you are like, what's going on? The thing that struck me was, wait a minute, he had four straight 20-win seasons, but only went to one All-Star game?
That's like, insane.
That's a problem.
Well, it is, and it's such a problem that I was like, well, what can... So I had to start checking his numbers, like what they were around June. Because when do you stop, like, voting for the All-Star game and then the managers get involved?
Yeah, it's like middle of June.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. So, okay. The first year he won 20 games in 87, he was 7-7, you know, in mid to late June with a 4.15 ERA. Okay, I get that one. He finished the season, obviously, 13-6 to go 20-13. The next year he was 10-5 with a 3.6-ish ERA. About 3.6. He had a couple starts in there, but it was a, you know, mid threes. 89, he finally was a All-Star, but he was 12-3 with a mid-3 ERA. So obviously 12-3 is going to get you on. So that's the year he made it. But so this is the one that puzzles me. So now he's had three straight 20-win years, and he's made the All-Star team. Usually at that point, you get credit for, you know what I mean? Like, I get it if you've never won at all. People don't really know who you are. But so the next year he started 8-1, and he was 9-6 at the All-Star, or, you know, in late June. But his ERA was like 2.5. So he should have been an All-Star in 90 also. You know what I mean? Because his ERA was mid-2s, and he was like 9-6 or 10-6 at that time. So that one's crazy. That one doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, he's coming off a World Series where he wins two games.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
World Series MVP. World Series MVP. Come on. I don't.
1-3.
I don't
the
get
league
it.
In starts four straight years. 88, 89, 90, 91. Man.
And Steiny, when you look at those. Up, I was just going to say, Shassy, real quick, that four straight 20-win seasons, nobody, I don't hear anybody talk about that. They talk about big unit, Randy Johnson, 300 strikeouts in a season. We talk about Pedro Martinez and some of his. Nobody ever brings it up, even around, well, I guess in Oakland they may, but, I mean, nobody brings it up. Four straight, 20 straight win seasons? That's insane.
I'd have to look. Well, and if you just... I can't imagine anybody's done that since. And I'll tell you, I can't imagine it's going to be done again at this the way baseball's being played now. No chance.
I mean, has any team had four straight years with a pitcher win 20 games in the last 15, 20? Like, I bet the Braves did it in the 90s, and I can't think of anyone else. Baltimore gets all that love for having four 20-game winners in one season, but you never hear it back to back to back. I was going to say, I know you guys are looking at the regular season stats, and those are really impressive. Just look at the postseason numbers. It's basically Whitey Ford, who played for the greatest Yankee run of all time, and it's Dave Stewart. And then, of course, you got all the modern guys who played after the expansion, after wild card, after all those other people go in there, like Andy Pettit, where his numbers are basically twice what Dave Stewart's are because he had way more opportunities to pitch. Dave Stewart, the numbers in the postseason, they tell the best story for me as far as his impact. Because we give Curt Schilling all this love. Oh, he was a postseason pitcher. Dave Stewart was way better than him in the postseason.
Right.
He was so much better than him in the postseason. I mean, come on. That was a catch-up sock. Come on, what are we doing here?
I mean, he was not a strikeout pitcher either. I mean, he could get you, but he never had more than, what, 100 and he never had 200 strikeouts in 205 one year with 261 innings. That's the best, you know, 192. So he didn't rely on striking guys out is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, he wasn't the greatest.
But was he a slider?
Yeah, forkball. The forkball was real popular.
Well, I know
Dave
the forkball, but I think it was slider, changeup, fastball as well. Like he had every pitch.
I guess you know what? I guess lasting impressions is everything, right? You look at his numbers in the '93 World Series. I get it. He was 36 years old. He had a 6.75 ERA when the Blue Jays beat the Phillies in the World Series. But he was really good against the White Sox. 2.03 ERA. Man, that's pretty damn good. 2-0 in that ALCS against the White Sox. You know, I mean, he's up there with the great postseason pitchers. But you know what, Steiny? I'm going to come down your road a little bit.
Okay.
If Guru would have asked the questions that Joe Shasky, the Butcher Boy, asked Dave Stewart, you would have got all over Guru. And what I mean by that is.
Why?
You know, you're one of my favorite pitchers. If I had to pick a player to pitch in the postseason, it'd be Bumgarner or Stu. Steiny would have got all over Guru for that.
Well, hold on. Here's what I will say. It was good strategy to set up the post-game pitcher because Joe wanted to ask him why he's not thought about. So he really – it did deserve some qualification, I thought. Because you can't just jump in and be like, hey, Dave, how come you don't get the credit you deserve?
Right. And I'm not ripping you, Shasky. I'm not ripping you for it. It's a great question. But I'm just saying, Steiny, those are things Steiny would have got our Guru about. I'm just saying.
Well, look.
You might be right.
Let me tell you. I played on a team, St. Mary's Giants, and you know our mutual friend, Reggie Milligan, Hill.
Big Reg.
Well, a bunch of us on this side of the city, like we all played baseball and basketball together. And I'm going through all these old photos that I have, and I'm looking at this baseball team from St. Mary's Park 3 years in a row, and it's three white boys or four white boys at most, depending on the year, and everyone else on the team is black. And I'm saying to myself, my God, I've been coaching baseball for the last 10 years. I can't think of a team that had this many black kids on it, and because there's no one playing baseball like that anymore. No. And I kid you not, when we would play strikeouts, whether it was at practice or whatever, someone would be Dave Stewart, and they'd put the hat down low with the hook, and they'd give you the look, and then they start wiping the brow, and you know, because you would emulate all the batters and all the different pitchers of that time, and Dave Stewart was like one of the go-tos for everybody to emulate.
Nah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, in my neighborhood, you know, you had another black people in the neighborhood. We all play baseball, run down, strike out. You know, we turn the cars into bases.
Pickle.
You know, one Toyota Corolla could be first base. This minivan in the middle of the block would be second base. You know, I actually got a cut on my arm for tagging a van. My uncle had a van in a window. I was trying to round the bases. We were using the cars as a basis, and my arm went straight through one of his windows in the van. So I had this cut, and I remember my grandma pouring peroxide all over my right arm. I'm like, can I go steal places? He's like, no, you're done. Get your ass in the house. You got this big cut on. We may need to go to the hospital. But it was like that in the city, Steiny. I mean, like, I remember the league I played in. You had the Mission Strikers. You had a bunch of Latin kids on that team with a few black guys. You had the team in the Sunset. It was a who's who. Yeah, white, black, Asian, everything. So it is sad. And what Stu said, it's just too expensive, especially for kids coming from low-income housing where their parents just don't have the money to pay for travel ball. And if guys are not going to foot the bill, which, you know, it's not their prerogative to. They don't have to foot the bill if they don't want to. You're just not going to get a lot of diversity in youth baseball when kids just can't afford it.
Yeah, and the one thing, so Richie Milligan, that's the guy you know?
Reggie Milligan. He's Milligan. A legend. Reggie Gage, all of them.
I got to tell you something. Here's one thing I've learned in my 30-plus years out in the Bay now. If San Francisco is a really small town in a lot of ways. Like, if you did grow up in the city, everybody knows everybody. Like, Castaneda is a guy who grew up in the city. He can be walking down a street in the city, and it's not just because he's known. It's like he knows people. Like, people in this, it's like really got this small town, everybody knows each other feel among the people who grew up here.
Mm-hmm. You know, Townie, it's funny. Steiny, it's funny that.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
I just did you the Uncle Townie.
I'm so out.
Wow.
Yeah, but this is where Reggie, you're going to love this. He had the hookup at the Pro-Am for Kezar. He used to work the board over there at Kezar Pro-Am back in the day. And you get
he still
to see
does.
Gary Payton, Jason Kidd, Brian Shaw, Bennett Davidson. That's a name from Arizona going way back. Right. Eddie House would be out there. And it was a who's who. And that was a spot to go. I don't know if you ever did that, Steiny, but that was one of the fun, cooler things to do during the summer on like a random Tuesday night. Go see Bay Pride or the Dream Team or one of them.
Monday through Thursday, definitely. The Women's Pro-Am will be all day Saturday. Talk about Bennett Davidson, 1997 Arizona Wildcat, national champion.
And he was sick,
Bennett Davidson. He was good on that team with Miles Simon and Bibby. But Reggie still works the board, Steiny. He still works the board for about 3 years. I did the PA announcing at the Pro AM. Reggie, I've seen Reggie. Boy, you didn't want him on the books. You never knew if a guy fouled out or not. If he didn't like you, that guy, your star player who had 4 fouls, really has 5 fouls. Because I see Reggie do some things with the books. Talk about cook the books. Reggie, I love you, Reggie, but I see you do some shady things with the scoring book.
I mean, I love gyms with character and history. And Kezar is just it's just a, you can tell when it's packed in it for a great game. Like I said this the other day, and I was thinking about this. Get to be my age, start thinking about it. I was like, what is the best sporting experience like I've ever had in my life now? You know what I mean? Just like what is, and to me, it's going to a high school basketball game or a high school when I was about 15 years old in a great gym that held 3,000 to 5,000, and it was packed, and it was a tournament game, a state tournament game, so the loser would be eliminated, and it was just electric. I mean, the only thing that remotely came close for me, and it was just this, it was We Believe, honestly, but to me, being in a high school for a high school game, packed gym, county title on the line or state championship, that's the one that gets me. That's the one that I, to this day, I could walk into a gym like that and just feel like a kid.
Well, they have the Bruce Mahoney. Well, it was every year at USF, and that one would be just packed to the rafters, and it would be at the college venue, so that was super cool. Kezar was just so unique. Kezar is so different, and I know AAA plays their championship game there, but growing up in grammar school at the different parks, if you made the playoffs, you played at Kezar. So, like, that was a big deal, Steiny, growing up in the city. Like, oh, we get to play Glen Park or Upper Noe or whoever. We're going to play them at Kezar. You know, this is where the real pros used to play, and that's a really cool venue. The other game that I think kind of represents what you're talking about, go check out Sarah versus SI. It's the jungle game. Every year at Sarah, they decorate the entire arena, and it's wild. I mean, it's a wild, fun atmosphere. Everyone should do that once.
That's who have game the battle you're talking of the birds. About? The jungle game, Sarah and SI. Sarah and SI down at San Mateo. You also have the battle of the birds between Lowell and Washington. As you mentioned, Shasky, the AAA championship. I saw Lenny Walls there, dunk on guys from Burton. Classic games there. You had the classic SI Balboa game with Winters Patterson. Then went to overtime, a state playoff game. It was a legendary game. It was packed. Also, the Bruce Mahoney at USF. That's a good one. We used to make fake tickets at Kinko's to get into that game. They all sold out. Had a buddy
rush
guy,
the side door.
Worked at Kinko's. Yep. Well, no, we did. We found out what the tickets looked like. We went to Kinko's, made fake tickets. And went into USF Memorial Gym and went to the Bruce Mahoney game. A couple years of girls' game and a guys' game.
You know what? To me, that's clever, good-natured fun in a way, even though you probably shouldn't do it. But you know what? That one's okay in my book.
Steiny, we're broke boys in high school. We're trying to get to the private school game as public school kids, which is why we always went to the football game at Kezar between SI and SH. We would wear our public school jerseys to try to get the girls at the private school to be like, hey, we're Washington High School. We're out.
Nice.
We're 5-0.
Congratulations.
You get the Galileo kids. You get the Lowell kids, the Mission kids, all talking trash. So it does have a small tie feel. Shout out to John Greenberg for the Pro-Am. A lot of memories there at the Pro-Am. Who runs the Pro-Am, the director of the Pro-Am.
Yeah, it's the best.
It is cool. Hopefully we can revive the Pro-Am. Hey, real quick before we get to Jock Brady, I don't want to derail the conversation here, but I want to spend 6 minutes here on Jamal Adams.
How about we spend five, because I want one more thing about Dave Stewart.
Go ahead.
Give it to me.
Okay, so one of the things they talk about is a problem that baseball has is, like, there's no uniqueness. There's no personality. They don't let these guys shine. They don't let them bat flip. You know, Dave Stewart was that kind of player, but he didn't even have to try too hard to do it. But he had a personality out, and he didn't even need to say anything. And, like, I was thinking, how did we go from like Al Roboski to now you can't show any emotion? Like, remember Al Roboski, Joe? He was a relief pitcher for the Kansas City Royals. He'd come into a game, throw his warm-up pitches, batter would come to the plate, he'd go behind the mound, and he would do this thing where he'd look into his glove, and then he'd pound the ball into his glove like, let's go! And if anything was like, if any batter would do anything similar to that, he'd get thrown at.
But this is the thing, Steiny. Rod Beck had the hanging arm, you know? He had his whole mannerism with the hanging arm, and he would do that. He'd death stare you back in there. Think about Jose Lima. I mean, I'm going back to the 90s, but Jose Lima was completely crazy. Double shooters everywhere, but I loved every second of it. Yeah. It was
Carlos
great
Perez
about it.
Carlos Perez from the Expos with the blue glove.
Thank you. Julio Franco. It took Julio Franco 16 minutes to get in the batter's box because he'd do this, the praying and then the flipping, and he'd be pointing and redoing the gloves and pulling a Nomar Garcia Parra. Then he'd put a cross in the actual batter's box with the bat. I mean, I loved every second of that.
That's a question I can't answer because I've been saying, what's wrong with having the hat to the side? What's wrong with King Griffey Jr. wearing his hat backwards in pregame warmups in the cage or whatnot? I don't know. It just seems like a lot of people scoff at this stuff because it's a national pastime. There's a certain code. There's unwritten rules to where you have to behave yourself a certain way. That's why I love Yasiel Puig. Show excitement. Show enthusiasm. Shows me you care. You know what I'm saying? Shows me that you care. So that's a question I can't really answer. If you guys smell my drift here. Real quick, do you trade for Jamal Adams or not? Jet safety. Name seven teams on this list. Ravens, Cowboys, Texans, Chiefs, Eagles, Niners, Seahawks. If you're the 49ers, Jimmy Ward has a 2-year contract. We know he's had injury history. Jaworski Tart's a free agent after the season. Do you pull a trigger and possibly make a trade for Jamal Adams, the high-flying safety out of LSU, who's now with the New York Jets?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You know, when he started with New York, they said he was, you know, was going to be a Jet for life. Apparently, he still could be, but it doesn't look like it. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you were talking about, like, okay, you got to give up a first-round pick, you would think, right? Okay. But then you've got a guy who's going to be your guy for 8 years, probably, and a shutdown guy. This is one of those where this is where John Lynch, and I should say this is where Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch make their money. You know, can they pull it? You know, Garoppolo was unknown. But for better or worse, the 49ers acquired a quarterback through a trade that got him, that helped get him to the Super Bowl. So they figured out a way to do that. Part of it was based on the Lynch and Shanahan's relationship with Belichick. But I have no idea whether they can do it or not. But they've shown that if they think the right guy is there, they'll try it.
This guy's a superstar. I mean, this guy is one of the best players on defense in the NFL. I wish they would have drafted him instead of Solomon Thomas, looking back on it. I mean, they just drafted Jamal Anderson, Jamal Adams, they'd be sitting pretty. It's going to cost so much, and you're obviously going to have to pay him. I don't know what their salary cap wiggle room is, paying him and Kittle. In a dream world, hell yeah, get me Jamal Adams. Move heaven and earth to do it. And this guy's, he's what I thought Sean Taylor was going to, you know, become had he played longer in the NFL. Like, he can run, he can cover, he can hit. He's an unbelievable player. Right, Steiny, this guy's one of those guys you watch on defense on every single snap, where he's at, his anticipation. He can play in the box. He can play up top in center field. I mean, he could do it all. I love Jamal Adams. The problem is just I don't know if they got the wiggle room or the draft capital to get him, but I'd love to do it.
Niners have a first, second, round pick next season, no third round pick, 2 fifths, a sixth, a seventh, and of course a fourth round pick. They have $16 million available. I would even do it as a 1 year rental because I think this team is close to winning a Super Bowl. And if they, he's one of those players where it's just like he just makes your defense better. He covers up every single hole on your defense, especially in the secondary. He makes the woo hit. He sets the tone. He scares receivers from running routes over the middle of the field. He's a natural-born leader. I know you got to pay Trent Williams. You have to pay George Kittle. You have to do a number of things on this roster. But if Jamal Adams is there and all they want is a first-round pick, well, you know what? Jamal Adams is going to be better than your first-round pick in 2021. I am making the trade for Jamal Adams here. I know we got to run. I want to pass some other news here, fellas. Some breaking news from Anthony Slater, our radio.com insider here at 95.7 a game. Sources, Klay Thompson has been cleared to train without restrictions on his heel left knee. Expectation is he'll be a full participant in Warriors summer minicamp. Full report. He has a full report there at theathletic.com. Anthony Slater saying that the Warriors and Klay Thompson has been cleared. Klay Thompson has been cleared to train without restrictions in his knee. We have to run here. We'll talk about that at 1:30 here, right after the Shasky Shuffle. Klay Thompson cleared to work out with the Golden State Warriors. He is a full go. Shasky, get ready, baby. Jock Breedy's coming up. Steiny Ponte right here at BSNG. Jock Breedy coming up with Whitey Gleason. And it is all brought to you by Fremont Bank, still open to serve the community they love with full-service banking. No compromises.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.